You're listening to the Art of Move podcast, hosted by Dr. William Raybar and Anthony Manuel, where we attempt to create a grand unified theory of human movement, biomechanics, and training. If you enjoy these episodes, you can watch them streamed live on nofilter.net, where you can interact directly and have all your questions answered in real time. 4, 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Art of Move podcast with myself, Anthony Manuel, my good friend, Dr. William Raybar. We are on episode 60, and joined with us today is Christopher Chamberlain. And Chris brings a lifetime of personal practice, over 15 years of coaching experience in the field of health and wellness. He's worked with individuals of all ages and abilities, including world-class athletes. His passion for educating others has led him to his current role as lead educator and director of programming at WEC Method, and he continues his unrelenting pursuit to mastery. I'm really stoked to have Christopher on because I know him as the dude who is strong as hell, who can throw on these multiple hundred pound sandbags, huck around, 160 plus pound kettlebells, super strong, but then is still fluid, moves really, really well and coordinated with the RMT ropes. To me, Chris, you balance something that I've been kind of humming and hawing over for a while since switching from kind of powerlifting to more biomechanics focused functional training, which is this sweet spot between high output strength and fluid movement. And because that was one thing that I kind of would flip-flop between, where it's like, man, I love lifting these barbells, I love being super strong, but I always feel like I move around like a mud brick afterwards if I over specialize in it. So for me, you kind of are this incredibly fascinating intersection of very impressive strength and very fluid movement. So for people,
I appreciate who just joined, that.
Yeah, well, man, I watch in awe at the reels and the footage that you have on your social media account, man. It's very, very impressive, and I'm really looking forward to grilling you about how you find that balance today.
Yeah. Good luck. It's not that hard. It's not that hard to keep up. So maybe some people will be pleasantly surprised today.
Sweet. So for the people who are just joining live, you're obviously the program director of WEC Method. You're very involved in the WEC Method form of training. You certify people in WEC Method rotational training. Mm-hmm. How about you give us just a quick little background for people in terms of how you got to this point in your training journey and how you got involved in this type of training?
Yeah, something kind of resonated with me a little bit that you just said there, with that powerlifting type background, lifting weights traditionally, things like that, and feeling like you're stuck in mud almost. I think it's kind of how you put it. Yeah. I've kind of always been on the outskirts of a lot of different modalities in the industry and a lot of different sects. I would say I started my journey probably with kettlebells. That's why I still stick to them so much. Like that kind of whole mentality and driving a movement with that, with heart style, strong first, RKC, things like that. But I never really dove into the education, like structure of it. I felt like it, most things I would do like that, they made me feel like I was restricted to how I felt like I wanted to move, like how my body felt like it needed to move. But there was lots of valuable information there. So I just happened to be somebody that could learn really well by just watching and assuming what somebody's experiencing out of things. So I've sort of kind of like done that my whole career, with kettlebells sort of being the driving force. I was really into CrossFit for a while. I almost competed in that at one point. Sort of what happened was I was getting really good at gymnastics. I was fairly strong. I was fast. I'm a pretty fast guy. I could run a sub 50, 400 pretty easy. I just didn't feel good. I felt like I was stuck in mud. And I was searching for something else. And I mean, I'm out here with David and I stumbled upon WEC Method. And for me, when I met him, I got to experience what we refer to as a coil, which we can talk about a little bit today. I'm sure David has brought it up millions of times on this already, but this idea of side bending or coiling core training, as we call it, and that engagement, the way that it was given to me at the time, had given me like a 30 to 40 pound PR in a single arm overhead press. And this guy was spitting information at me that it was supposed to make me better at running. And I was like, well, fuck, cool. Like if I can get stronger and better at something else, I really like that. So that got me like just obsessed with what this was. And at that time, it was like kind of like nobody knew what it was in this building. You know what I mean? It wasn't organized in a way that was digestible to other people. So I sort of had to come in. And as I was telling you earlier, Will, was I was doing like 6 hours a day of rolling ropes, which is the RMT ropes, a tool we use here, which means any rope, but that's a tool we use here. And we learned certain patterns with it, and we sort of emphasize not jumping it. And I was just obsessed with it. It gave my body this feeling that I was not stuck in mud anymore. And I could just feel my athleticism and my potential like unwrapping. And I was still doing that amongst my traditional, whatever was traditional for me at that point, which was not traditional for anybody else, but my type of training. And it just unlocked something in me. And I felt like I was fucking 18 again. And I've always just wanted to teach people. That's why I became a coach. I could have done many other things, but I wanted to be a coach and I wanted to educate people to move better. And I felt like I felt something in myself that I needed to give to other people. So I just like, I had to be here and I had to lead it and help lead the education here and teach people how to get that in their bodies, because it's something every one of us needs to have. And it's ridiculous that great things were not getting us there, because I was training all the time and it just was not getting me there without so much effort. And I have to put in so much less effort now, like way less. It's ridiculous. It's comical for me to keep what I want now, actually. And I wish I had known that earlier, but that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy to give that to the future. So that's how I ended up here. It was just like trusting in my own practice, recognizing that something was missing from it, testing the waters on things and finding something, and then taking advantage of opportunity to help teach others in it. So fortunate.
So I selfishly want to know how you get so powerful there. What are the WEC method secrets that get you into that power? A couple things come to mind. I've looked into WEC method quite a bit. I'm certified in RMT. Verticalization, torsion, those words come to mind. Can you explain how you use those principles, maybe what they are, and how you integrate that into your practice? Strongman.
Yeah. So the big thing I would say, especially, is having like an external driving force on stuff. So like, what am I targeting my training towards? And unless you're an athlete, you typically, maybe you don't even actually know. It's usually, I don't know. I feel like I've had a lot of clients in my life that didn't actually know what they were doing this stuff for. They just knew it was good for them. I'm trying to get a little more on the mindset of getting people to really take ownership of why they're doing what they're doing, and taking like, this is valuable time. Why are you spending it here? It's not just for your health. Like, it needs to be more than that for me. So I think having these sort of external forces, whatever that be for you, we use cueing for that. Like, if the person doesn't have it, if it's an athlete, then it can be the direct carryover to whatever they're doing. For me, I grew up as like a carpenter, a laborer. Like, I worked with my dad until I was 25, in the midst of me being a trainer as well, building houses and just working hard, working land. We had property, and there was a task that had to get done, and I didn't always know what the task was. And having that external drive of like, this has to get done today, I think is really valuable as a starting place for a lot of people. It's like, actually figure out what you're doing, right? Goal. Which I don't like stuff like that anymore. Just saying your goal. I think it gets thrown around. Words are really powerful. I think we need to make sure there's still meaning behind them. So I think that's something that's really important. But on top of that, WEC method, the secret sauce here, because I feel like I always had that. I had my get the job done thing, but it was starting to still make me feel like I was stuck in mud. And it's because I didn't have this underlying sort of movement principle or practice within all that exploration that I was doing, that I was always steering everything back to, that let me sort of do whatever I wanted. And I knew I was still moving forward. So for us, David's probably missed a little bit about the torsion line stuff that I've been dabbling with a couple other people. I learned it probably originally from DJ Murakami, Strong Camps on Instagram. And he learned it, I believe, from Julian Pinal from Strong Fit. So that's a cool group of people to look into. But I've kind of dabbled in a lot with that and mixed it into what we do here at WEC Method. And having that root of that torsion line and then the idea of what rotation actually means and recognizing that all forms of movement are a form of rotation, even the sagittal stuff, the center stuff people like to talk about. That's why we talk about torsion, because something's meeting the middle or leaving it. And having that now in whatever my practice is lets me move forward, right? I'm always training that concept. So if I, again, with somebody, we're so fortunate that we can sort of just do whatever the hell we want. We don't really have survival needs to train anymore. Let's all be honest on that. It's kind of a joke. So it's something that we can sort of adapt to whatever the fuck we want to if our brain likes it. So I'd like to keep it on something that's probably more practical and kind of towards what our ancestors, I guess, did or needed. So that's where we sort of bring everything back to the idea, like, okay, locomotion's a nice track. Everybody's going to get up if they're fortunate enough to have legs to walk. They're going to walk in the gym. They're going to leave the gym. It's something we're all going to have sort of in common, the most of us. So if we can sort of find the root of that and then use that torsion line and then understand the rotation within that, then we have like a cool base to kind of guide people on. And I think that's really powerful for a coach to have, because they can kind of, I know with my clients early in my career, it was like just people just want to be there and just do something new and exciting for them. And they're not particularly happy to be there sometimes. So it just needs to be enjoyable. So variability comes into play, and you might not be specializing in things because some people aren't ready for like skill specialization yet. So it's nice to have an underlying current that everything's still moving this person forward, and they can explore whatever the hell they want until they find their passion and whatever it want is, you know? So cool. I don't know how your little rant there. So the key is the secret sauce is rooting to proximal core training. Let me put it that way. Proximal core training, understanding that and how we present it here at WEC Method, that's sort of the secret sauce, because it lets me do whatever I want. And I know I'm steering it towards the same goal. Even if externally it looks different to you, it's no different to me. Got it? Internally.
Yeah. So those principles would be like coiling on a single side. I heard you say four sides to one center in a podcast. And I'm going to give you an example of what I heard you say. You were talking about going into almost like you're carrying an Atlas stone and getting the internal torsion to actually go into a deadlift. And then you deadlifted, I don't know, 500 plus pounds using that principle, which is opposite of what most people do, right? Could you explain how that works in terms of the torsion lines and the rotational principles and coming back to center?
Yeah. So I think actually strong people do use internal torsion to deadlift. So that's not opposite of what people do. What people cue the other side, I think, is typically when somebody's thinking of a trap bar deadlift and they want to get a more vertical spine and shin angle. So it's more athletic carryover, right? And David, his WEC 45 deadlift he used to do here prior to getting here, we used to have this big platform here I've sort of torn apart, but it made it so you could very easily adjust people's levels for the trap bar deadlift. So you could get spine shin angle with whatever athlete you wanted, and it allowed you to tap external torsion, which I find a lot of people at the low end of not actually like really know what they're after in lifting tend to cue that external torsion line. And it doesn't end up leading to like huge performance benefits, like, cause they're like applying cues that aren't to the move they should be applying it to. It's like a miscommunication of information. They're not the wrong cues. It's not the wrong move. It's just the wrong combination. They're both good. So again, I grew up laboring. I grew up picking up shit, like actual shit, you know what I mean? Not tools in a gym, like, hobby. It was, I had to pick this up and do it. And cabinets were a big one that rung out to me because I had to pick up these huge cabinets all the time. Yeah, I wasn't using equipment all the time. Pick it up and bring it in the house because it was round, which demands that line of intent and it has to have the slack out of it, and it has to be safe because I got to do it all day, and it's important, and it's totally safe and it's totally fine. You know what I mean? But if I started to apply external torsion to this idea of like pulling back and through, it would push the tool away from me, the thing away from me, which is the opposite of the external task of pick up and move it. You know what I mean? So it doesn't make sense. Now, it may not be the most appropriate move if I'm trying to train a specific, if my external goal is like a certain type of forward movement. Maybe it's not the choice of that, right? And see, what I love is our little map of the body and how we're exploring rotation. It's not just the linear goal of just like forward bipedal movement, because yes, that's important and it's absolutely a thread we should have. It's a great one to root to and you're not going to go wrong on it, but there are also a ton of other options, and knowing all of them and knowing how they all relate to each other, whether it's productive for you or it's more productive for me, depends on our external goals and stuff. So that's my big thing on it.
So there was one term that you used, you know, you had to take the slack out, right? And that was something that was an internal cue for me too, in terms of when I was lifting heavier weights, whether it was a sandbag or a barbell or any other awkward, you know, I just moved the last month and I was doing the same thing. I had these dressers and a big pull in towards the proximal core essentially, and I'm taking the slack out. And that was sort of the nervous system input that I found limited my fluidity of my movement, was this, you know, it's the irradiation. It's how much tension, how much force can I produce? And it's like, it's almost how rigid can I get? And the sort of focus that I've kind of shifted to since starting this podcast, since talking to Will, since talking to all of our guests that are more movement and biomechanics focused, is this idea of having some slack so that you can have that elastic quality in your fascia, having some balance in that point. And so the question I kind of have is, when you're emphasizing this, like take the slack out of your system, does that have a negative adaptation for fascial elasticity? And if so, do you need to balance it with other forms of training that are more like elastic and bounding, if you want to maintain good movement?
Yeah, so I get what you're saying. So a lot of that kind of stuff, let's say slacking out, you're almost like associating it with irradiating and tension. This shit doesn't always have to have tension behind it by any means. And a lot of our training is specifically coiling and what we do bilaterally. Not all of it, but a lot of it, we're trying to introduce new range. We're in a training environment. I want to expose range so that I have range in my external goal, which is the thing I'm doing normally, which is going to probably have more fluidity to it. So a lot of this stuff, I don't go throw the ball still, go do stuff, but I'm going to expose you to range so you know point A, point B, and you can move fluidly between the two. So I'm really big on that. The big thing I'm pushing is proximal range of motion. And like, I'm obsessed with that. Like, I want you just to understand how much more range you have there and what you can tap into. And there's like four quadrants, as Dave calls it. But there's like, you need to know what that is. And you need to learn. Then I want to teach you how that works distally and stuff. And right. I do isometrics, and we'll have like irradiation and all that shit, but it's not tense all the time. So okay. I don't think there's any sort of bad neural pathing or anything. You want to say that? No. You're exposing range of motion. We call it the full range of rotation is what we call it.
So can we take a second to define what that is in terms of if you're prioritizing proximal range of motion, how do you define that? And how do you measure that and measure progress on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, to some degree, it'll be feel. I guess you could get shit out and measure it if you wanted to, if you really need to. But it's going to be your range of a side bend on one side, so coil, and your range on the other. And that's going to be based off an external cue. So like, you just did your side bend there, but your head went like this and your head went like that, and you lost balance. And that was a vulnerable position, technically, if you were moving forward or in a fight or something, being sideways, you're off kilter. So there'll be some like cueing like that would dictate that range. Like, are you able to keep the eye level when you get this range, and can you maintain balance or something? I don't know. You can come up with something with that. But essentially it's how far can I go left? How far can I go right? And then that educates the center and gives the center more range. And then you would do that both in internal torsion and external torsion, if you wanted to really dive into it. or you would do it in whatever you felt was just appropriate for the person and the task rather than some global approach. Global's fine, but global sometimes messes up performance. So sometimes depends on what level and what you're doing. So if you're just after health, why not open all of it, right? Open all the doors. But that the way I'm really big on, like, I don't like traditional testing most of the time. I do sort of like an eyeball test that I do with our rope. It's a little more advanced, but when somebody has like their right foot in front, it's more of like an integrated range of motion because I'm giving them a complex task that their entire body has to do that will expose them to a fluid range of the coil. So it's not the irradiated tense. This is why I like it. It's like a more natural understanding of it. And I will put like them in a split stance and I'll have them perform like an overhand matador and I'll have them steer the rope into the, we do like the cardinal line is what we call it. So north, south, that's like the rope should always roll on that, but I'll have them steer it off to an intercardinal 45 one way with their right foot in front and then their left, and keep their right foot in front and steer it that way. And when you do that, because there's a rope that can hit your body, it forces you to coil deeper onto those sides. And I have found that if I use that tool, I can get a clear understanding of like if I put chalk on the rope and I could see exactly what mark they were hitting on a compass, like on their left coil or whatever, you're gonna see that they can't actually take a tool and wield it into this range of motion over here with like keeping an external cue of the eyes over here and like, and it kind of gives you this global understanding of range of motion when a task is involved. And it lets us now spend time putting more coil variant on that side, working on the ISO and see if we can get improvement. And my first exposure to that was, I worked with Lizzie Smith, who's a Paralympian swimmer. And she, honestly, she had not really had a prosthetic most of her life. And she had just sort of gotten a prosthetic a little bit before meeting me. And she wanted to learn how to kind of function and see if she could kind of find center again with it. And I taught her the rope pattern. She learned all of them with the prosthetic. It was really cool. We like got a special attachment and like had it hooked into it. And she's like sneaking and doing all this stuff. And it woke up all of this stuff on this side of her body that she had never felt ever in an entire life. And we sort of got to use that compass sort of integrated mobility test to improve that side, and we could clearly see it. You know what I mean? It was really awesome. I think it's cool to have a tool like that. And it's really simple, but it's like complex if you don't know the rope. So, but it's actually really simple once you learn it. And it's a nice tool to have.
So when you have someone fairly new, let's say they know how to rope, but they're at a just below intermediate level. A lot of people are there. What pattern would you get somebody to really instill in themselves? Let's say beyond the basic figure eight, underhand and overhand, what's your next favorite pattern to instill in someone?
Yeah, so this, the main thing, honestly, I probably do like 90% of the time is the underhand matador and the overhand matador. I think the best thing you can invest your time in, they're the most satisfying feeling, so they have longevity in the fact that you want to pick it up and you don't mind adding it into your workout. And they're the best tool to help you navigate changing direction. So if you have that skill, it lets you feel like you're doing that I teach a drill called circumnavigating, just because you're moving from north to south, like you're riding the line. It's very satisfying to do that. You're teaching the person to shift their weight constantly. They're not having to be overly tense. They're patterning things. It's gonna sort of meet the person where they're at in their range of motion of my rotational language, and it just unlocks it all. And that's what it did for me. You know what I mean? That's like exactly what it did for me. It's exactly what I see it do for other people. And if you just put reps in on that line with that pattern specifically, there's a lot of joy in it too. It like just feels good. You're very successful at it. It gives you a little extra beat to sort of make sure you're owning where you're at. Like you actually own your balance. You're not rushing to the next side type thing. So it's really satisfying that in that regard. You don't need to learn anything fancy. That one's super simple. Anybody can learn that really easily, very quickly. And you can just start accumulating reps. And then the most important thing to me with it is that drill of moving, going back and forth from north to south with the eyes. and moving from under to overhand in the rope. I think that's just the most powerful thing you can do with the rope. I wish I was doing that when I first started, like immediately. I didn't even cross my mind actually when I was first learning it to turn, which is such a simple thing when I was first playing around with it. So if you go back and watch some old videos of me, I'm like a robot. I'm like, like super stiff doing it and very fluid now, right? So that tool works wonders.
So that would be the biggest. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Please. Go ahead.
Okay. So something reminded me of something you said probably 2 or 3 years ago. You were talking about lines of intent. And I don't know if you meant to do this, but it just hit me that, oh, I've been doing Indian clubs, mace bells, ropes. They're all just going on the same line. And if I just treat them the same, I'm going to have the same result, right? And that's what lines of intent meant to me. Could you clarify a little bit more? Is that what it actually means? Or
yeah, so sure, that's a definition, I guess. I think at the time was probably talking about torsion, but I was not knowing I was talking about torsion or not knowing how to talk to people about it at that time, for sure. All right, me and DJ, when we did a course, it was called Chi Torque. We were calling them the line of intent and sort of talking about it. But the torsion, yeah, there we go. We got a fan. Torque sick, yeah. Which promotes internal most of the time. Mm-hmm. Yep. But I do like what you're saying here. I love this idea, this line, right? So what's really cool about swinging implements is they sort of have to obey the line, which is cool, but it's also a really big restriction if you think about it. You don't have full freedom of movement. But if you just know what that tool does that, you can start wielding tools differently and start understanding that if I'm going to pick up a kettlebell, it's kind of the same thing. Like there's this line, this cardinal law that it all sort of follows if it's a swinging implement. Mm. And that's why we have like our RMT club that I love it. Like I've been working with maces and stuff since I was like 16, making them in my backyard. And it was just like badass that we have a tool now that lets me change that line and the directional intent of how those tools typically work. You know what I mean? Like that's fucking cool to me. So I can get a new training experience, which is really nice. And then that's like where we get into like, that's why we end up liking to separate the hands. And we start talking about like locomotion and using things like pulsers and Weck method, because they allow me to manipulate that understanding simultaneously. I can be running north and north, and they're totally different. Like if you like look at it that way, and you can start, you have more freedom of movement, which is what you're after ultimately. Is I want to do whatever I need to do. I don't want to feel restricted by the tool. And I'm a really big tool wielder. That's why you'll see me with like just all sorts of shit all the time. Like I kind of hate that I do that because visually it's kind of like I can never do some of Chris's workouts. Because I just have so much crap all the time. But like, I like crave stimuli from like new tools, because the same thing does not feel the same with a different thing. You know what I mean? I learned something new from that experience, and it roots me deeper into my movement practice. Like what I'm trying to root things to, it justifies it. And that's why I really go out of my way to try to show like heavier stuff in what we do, because people like it, but it also justifies it. Like it shows that if I ride that line, it like, okay, that's a true line. It's a good line. You know what I mean? Because I feel fucking awesome. Like everybody's like after pain management and all this shit all the time. I'm just like, I don't fucking hurt. I feel good. like I was feeling muddy before I got into this, but I have not really had injuries. Like, and a lot of that I think comes down to mentality and just knowing whatever level you're at and where you're pushing is good, but. Yeah. Go on.
Anthony, do you have anything to add to that one?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned how much less you have to do to maintain what you have. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of attribute that to the diversity of stimuli that you're putting yourself through? It's like you kind of have like a minimal effective dose across broad domains of different stimulus, or what do you think it is that makes it so that you have to do less to maintain or even advance more?
Yeah, so same external goal, training my proximal core. So I always am working the same thing, and I don't develop skill sets anymore. I don't chase specific skills like aggressively. Like I'm never going to power lift because I'm going to be deadlifting and benching and squatting 5 days a week or whatever. And I'm going to specialize in that. And I don't want to specialize in specific patterns, even using the same intent under it. I open up a broad array of patterns that feel appropriate to me, like intuitively. Like I feel like I need to squat. I'm just going to squat with a different tool because it's a different feedback, but I'm going to funnel it to the same thought process in my proximal core. So I'm always moving forward. So the next time I go to another squat pattern, I feel like I've PR'd. If I did a sandbag squat 4 months ago and I decide to do one tomorrow, hell, I might do that. I bet I'll do better tomorrow on it than I did 4 months ago. You know what I mean? I haven't specialized in the sandbag squat, but I've strengthened my proximal core. I'm going to funnel it to that same idea. I'm good type thing. And big thing with me with that time saving thing is I took a job here full time. I wasn't just training anymore where I had like an hour in between clients where I could work out and do stuff. So I have responsibilities in my job. And then I also had a baby at the same time. So, and I'm a dad. Like I love being a dad. So a lot of my time I would much rather spend with my family and important things in my life. You know what I mean? So training did not become the thing at the front, but I can't lose my training. You know what I mean? I have things I need to have. So this sort of all came to me at the most beautiful time because I lost a lot of time. I had a lot of changes, but I had something way stronger to root all my training to. I wasn't bouncing between shit anymore and losing a ton as I was doing it because I was doing kettlebells and then I was doing CrossFit and then I was doing gymnastics and then I was learning to swim and I was sprinting and I just had all this stuff that I felt like I was leaving something that I loved. And then I'd come back around the circle and I felt like I'm excited to be here again, but like I feel like I'm starting over a little. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't. I had too many things that I love because there's a lot of cool shit that you can do now, a lot of great fitness hobbies. So that was kind of a bummer. But now, like in that circle, I've got this just right in the center. I got this next freaking hub that I can root all of that into. And then I can sort of dance to these skill sets that I used to love and I can excel in them very quickly again, or I'm already good at them still, which has been very nice for me, and my training time has diminished, like gone down a lot because I was trying to maintain skills, which skill set, if you are working on, you got to put time into stuff. So the time I've put into stuff now is on the rotational training and how it is in my body. And then I can apply that to anything new I learn. So I can dive into any new thing that's going to pop out and I feel really excited about it, or pick up a new tool that I'm inspired by and I'm excited to apply my way of thinking to it or my way of moving to it because I know I'm already going to be successful at it. So there's less barrier of entry. There's better mentality behind that. There's less anxiety or fear or like anything like that. You know what I mean? It's like I'm always winning, which is good. I keep talking to people about this. Like you just need to be winning constantly. Just feel good about everything you're doing. When it comes to movement, you don't want any barriers.
It sounds like even with the wide variety of movements and stimuli that you have, you still keep the sort of principle of proximal core with everything that you're doing, proximal core and rotational training with everything that you do. So there is still a high frequency of like a specific skill, but it's a skill that you can sort of branch out and apply to many different movements, many different things. You know, because I'm kind of the same, you know, I did the Ido Portal method and fell in love with the gymnastics rings. I have a CrossFit Banff. You know, from when I was coaching at CrossFit and I was trying to compete in CrossFit as well. And that's the big struggle where it's like, man, like I love so much in terms of fitness and strength. And it always feels like if I bounce from one thing to another, it's you're over specializing. Ido Portal always said, the more you specialize, the bigger the price you pay. And I found that was really true. So it sounds like you have a first principle that you kind of keep, which is this proximal core and the rotation, and then you can apply that to so many other things. And as long as you maintain that skill of proximal core awareness and intention, that you can apply it to a broad array of other things, especially if you've already invested in some certain, you know, I see you on the rings still doing muscle ups and stuff. You're doing like 450 pound deadlifts on a Bosu ball. Like you have like everything is still there, but you just do it with this first principle, this consistent thing. How frequently are you training? How frequently are you practicing that skill?
I mean, everything I do is that skill. This is where I say everything is it, because it comes back to locomotion. So every step's a rep. That's what we love. Right. It's like, I'm always training. When I dive in into a higher intensity, I'm probably training 4 days a week if I'm lucky. And it's not at an aggressive pace like I used to be, like I said. And it doesn't even have to be that. Most of the time it's, I'm full-time dad at night. Like, my wife goes to work. So I'm like, if you'll let me go into the garage and work out, I'm so excited. Like, if I didn't have music over my thing, you'd be hearing him be like, go dad. He's like moving the bar for me. It's a good time. But like, if he doesn't want to be there, I got to be fast. And that, like, I got to get in whenever I can get in. And that would be detrimental, FYI, which to like somebody that's like by the book, supposed to hit this number, got to do this workout today. And it would be a loss, because I would have to pick between being a dad and working out for myself. And that would kill me. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just be a slob because I'm going to pick being a dad. And I think that's the appropriate choice in that case, to be quite honest. So because I don't have this rule set of like, God, I got to get these many reps done or this weight done today or whatever to progress to meet my goal. My goal is just to get better at proximal rotation. Then I'm going to tackle whatever I can tackle in here. And then there's a layer of it of like intuition, because prior to WEC method, I was obviously training. I've only been here like 5 years, and I've always sort of had this intuitive approach to training. Like, I would honestly, like, when I'm really actually in a training cycle, like, I have like right before I fall asleep, like, I have like a dream, or like, I feel like I need to do something tomorrow, and that's what I do. So it's as simple as that. And so it's just like listening to your body and knowing what your body wants to do and not what the paper says to do type thing, I think is really important. I know that's challenging for people, but honestly, I don't care, because I think it's taking ownership of actually listening to what your body wants. So that's what that means. And that's what it is. And I think it ends up being simpler in the long run if you accept that. So you don't have to be stuck on these, stuck in programs, or don't worry about deviating and find structure in something else. Yeah.
I like that idea of rooting to a principle and sticking to that type of training. Especially a lot of people have that variable where they're going to take a certain amount of time off and then they have to restart again. It's like, no, you can root it into a single variable and always do your training. So if someone comes upon this, they work out, they do yoga, the average person, they're like, oh, I want to start getting into biomechanics. What's a cue that you could give them that would change the game for them? Like, is it a royal coil? Is it something that's going to be like, oh, this works immediately?
Dude, I mean, if you'll do a whole move, it'd be the royal coil, 100%, because that understanding that, the cueing behind that, and like keeping the eyes on an external target and feeling that side bend, whether you're feeling an internal or external, I could give shit less. Accepting that range of motion is okay. You're going to be all right if you side bend, like, especially if it's all directed towards something externally, like, that will be game changing for you. And that's why I'd like, we give that information out always free. Like, just take it, like, do that, try it, and just do something you like, because that's exactly what I did. Had me do it, and then I set a PR in something I loved. You know what I mean? Like, that was huge for me. So it, to the point that I wanted to come here and teach it. Like, that's ridiculous. So I want that everybody to experience that and go do it in what you like, because everything I'm saying is this, if this is first principle, then it should apply to what you like. And I don't need to tell you what to like. You know what I mean? I don't, my wife's like, does pole arts, and we own pole dancing studios, and we work with aerialists, and I work with swimmers and stuff, and like, I don't care about ground contact and like that shit. Like, it has nothing to do with those athletes. And if that's their life and their passion and all that, then like, okay, then I need something. If what I'm saying works on the ground, how the hell does it work in the air? And can I still apply it to that? And like, is it all going to make sense? And this makes it make sense to me. And I have aerial art experience, you know what I mean? So like, I know what that feels like working on the rings. Like, it's a different world. And you got to know how that works to be able to accomplish that task. And I don't think that there are not practical tasks. I think they're good things to work on and good skill sets, and it's a cool hobby. So, but knowing how I can take that hobby and still bring it back to taking a better step, that's money to me. Or for me, a lot of it, because I get the opportunity to create movement and look at it differently and try something new with what I know. It lets me create. Like, that's so exciting to take something I already loved and to be able to add to it or try it a little differently. Like, that is awesome. Like, I already know this works and it's awesome and I loved it. Like, why not try it this way and just change it, move it forward? You know what I mean? Give somebody, maybe this way will inspire somebody to do something I know worked and I love, but maybe they don't like it the way I like it. So try it a different way and see if it works for you, type thing. So that's why I think tools are actually really good too. I think a lot of people that get like I wasn't like a product guy. Like, I like tools, but like, that's always like a weird spot for me to like join a company that has product behind it and things like that. And I think, to be quite honest, like, that's so silly to have even been in that headspace. Like, what a guarded place. Like, tools are tools and tools are fucking awesome. Like, you get different feedbacks from them. That's why I'm like a stimulus junkie now. Like, give me a different tool so I can feel what I want to train with a different tool, because I learn from it. And like, as many tools as you'll give me, like, bring them on, and or none. Like, if you want to stick to one and master it, cool. But like, the idea that I move from tool to tool is where I master the movement practice, not the tool itself. So that's where you mentioned, like, how often do I rope still? I rope still a lot, but I also walk a lot, and I like run a lot, and like, I swing other things a lot, and they sort of follow the same principles and laws of that stuff. So I can always pick my rope back up, and I'll just spend 10 minutes maybe getting acclimated again to look like a boss again. But I don't have to roll every day unless I'm feeling really excited to. But I have that option now, and having the option is such a powerful place to be. I don't feel limited. So it's a cool place to be, and it's not that hard to get there, is what we're trying to get to people. So I'm nobody special. You know what I mean? Like, everybody can tap into that.
So I love this idea of having, well, that first principle as a foundation for anything else that you want to do, because, well, first of all, it makes you universally applicable to literally anyone who wants to improve at their craft. I'd love to dive into a few different examples of how coiled core could apply to different practices, since you have experience in CrossFit and you have the internal understanding of like the mindset, the variability and skills. How do you feel like WEC method could improve CrossFit athletes?
So I think anything that goes from side to side, we would immediately help CrossFit. So most of the events, things that CrossFitters don't like, involve running, involve swimming, involve anything that they're having to traverse. So just that element of it, knowing that they can take all of that power and all that energy they put into things and have a moment of extra efficiency, I think would be very valuable to them. I think that's number one. And then again, I'm really big on sagittal stuff. You should be lifting, and they do like a lot of strongman stuff now. It's about being varied and being able to take on whatever you do. So this is really is CrossFit. Like, this is exactly what CrossFit is in a sense. So just being able to root, to slack out, to have that, I think would just make that awesome athlete for how much time they put in, because I know how much time a CrossFit athlete puts into that programming and how much time they do on recovery, to have any level of efficiency in them and something else to root into that is not the lift, which honestly, yeah. I kind of think a CrossFitter, I mean, because they're exposed to so much variation, they kind of do it in their own way, but they just don't have the map. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I felt like I was kind of doing, but I just wasn't going to a range I could, because some of the lifts that have sort of become staple don't take me there. So when I get exposed to one that could take me there, I don't know I can go there. You get me?
Yeah.
Do you have an example of a lift that doesn't quite take you there, and then what you could
add? So, like, think of a lunge is the biggest example for us for anything. Like, if I see somebody does my training and they're not doing a lunge somewhat close to what I showed them, like, I feel like I didn't get my point across, or maybe didn't understand the benefit of it, or that it's just the perfect place to experience it, where you get like sort of that head over foot balance, whether it be over the back leg or the front leg, I don't care. But it's like where I would want to see somebody get that full commitment to weight shifting, because you're moving forward or you're moving backwards, you're lunging or you're moving laterally. You know what I mean? Like there is a displacement of your mass, like you're changing it. So it's like where the cueing structure would come in and where you would be able to find like that recoil and elasticity from the coil. So that's where I would want to see it. But if you've been exposed to so much of the other stuff, when you get exposed there, your ability to tap into it is very limited because you haven't trained the range. So I think just exposing the range would be really valuable. And then learning to do it fluidly is ultimately like the longevity. So keeping your health and staying healthy as a CrossFitter, I think is a challenging thing over time. You know what I mean? You're just constant. So you're getting lots of work done, lots of things done all the time. So, yeah, for any athlete, repetitive, anything. So
I know you've worked with Shane Frezen from Fight Tips. I watched that video where you were showing him some moves with the pulsers. I'm really into martial arts, and I want to know all your deepest secrets there. What can I do to integrate a tool or something you've learned from these high level martial artists, training them, interacting with them, that I can add in into my punching or kicking or rhythm, timing, whatever?
The most impactful thing is that forward locomotive drills don't really apply to martial art athletes. So I really got this nice little kick in the butt when I was working with Jordan Burroughs, who's a Olympic wrestler, a very famous one. It was interesting working with pulsers for him because every one of these fight athletes, I put something in that and I tell them to throw their elbow behind them, like get that elbow high, like whatever. They're not an athlete that ever wants their hands behind them. You know what I mean? Their world is protection. It's all this internal torsion stuff being out in front here. So exposing them to that, while that might be beneficial for their overall health or something like that, like working that type of stuff. I found that keeping them in it and working with tools like pulsers allowed them to find speed with a tool out in that world, which is, I think, is a very difficult tool to tap into for that type of world. So we're able to use like called a cross pulse, where instead of like the traditional like arm cycle we would do for like running, we actually crisscross the arms and it sort of gives you more of like a draw in, it pulls you through. So we were doing like a lot of shooting drills and things like that, that just make more sense in that environment. So there's like a whole nother side to that. And that's why I said, it's always important to remember that it's not always just the one thread. That thread is good and it's fine if you write it and you'll make a career off of it, but open the doors up and let's try to expose everybody to everything if we can figure it out. So that was really game changing for me. And talking to the wrestling staff, they're like the coaching staff, and they were at where's Jordan? I'm trying to remember, can't even think right now. But we were talking to staff there at the college, and they were like, yeah, like when we got a new coach, like in strength and conditioning coach for like the basketball team, the football team, they tried to like force every one of the programs to do these like strength and conditioning markers, like all these tests. And they were all based off stuff that field athletes could do. So like these like wrestlers and all these guys were fucking awful at them. And it's making them look like they're not a good athlete based on this structure of we test this and they're not a good athlete. And the guys that were good at it, that were wrestlers, were terrible wrestlers. So like recognizing there's like a whole nother like side to all this stuff, and you can still be fast in it and explosive in it, and it's valuable and it's important, I think is really big there. And then just this idea of owning your own space. So like fighters talk about like not overextending and displacing themselves and stuff like that. So all of our training sort of teaches you to root that way. Our limit force elastic stuff, the way we use like elastic bands and stuff like that, really teach that principle, like where I can get out to like 200% intensity. Somebody can like pull me out, and like we used to put me on like track blocks and three guys would carry me out under the band tension. And then I would just root into a coil, and like, that's actually what my coil needed, but there was no physical way for my body to get out there by itself. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the intensity I needed. And then you could cut the cord, and like it would make a terrible noise, but I would be right there ready because I'm so rooted, you know what I mean? Like into my core, but that's rooting me to the earth, you know what I mean? But I felt light as a feather. So I'm not stuck, but I'm rooted in myself. So I think that's a big thing. It's like that limit force elastic training, knowing you can be fast out here, having tools that expose you to that. And then again, remembering that like your training is meant for carryover, and I don't want to expose somebody to too much specialization in the training program because they spend so much time specializing on their job. They have a very specific external task that like, I don't need you to get good at squatting in here. You know what I mean? I don't need you to get good at this. I could be after a pattern, but like I can get after that pattern, like such a different approach now. And they feel better leaving. Like my thing is they got to leave with a big ass smile on their face when they leave the gym with me. And that's it. You know what I mean? And they're craving the next one. Like they're looking forward to the next session because it's not a pain in the ass. I got a lot of like athletes, especially football guys that come in, which one of them just kind of came in down here is a long snapper that was working out with the Patriots and stuff. And like, he having to do the checkbox of the lifts you have to do, whether you feel good or not, you leave your back sore, you just feel like you're stuck in mud. I kind of think that's been the theme today. Like, but you just have to do it and then you go be your athlete. And like, that's just wears on the person. Like you don't need that barrier. I know like when I honestly almost didn't get into fitness because when I played high school ball, I wasn't an overly big guy, but my older brother's huge. He's like 6'5" and he was like 250 in the tight end and all state. And then I show up right when he leaves and like I'm littler, but they're like after me. So they want to put me in a weight room and start getting me big. And they would just beat me up with barbells. I wasn't getting any sort of guidance. And the guidance I was getting was making me feel worse. And like, I kind of just fucking hated it. So I just had a nasty mindset around even training in general. Like I'd rather just go lift heavy rocks and carry lumber with my dad. I felt like I got stronger doing that. So like that's important that environment feels productive for the person. And I make my freaking, all my athletes, they need to, at some point, there's got to be a point that I don't need to train them. Like that's, you're not, if we're not getting there, then we're not doing this. This is not making sense. Like you need to be able to figure out at least a low level of this stuff on your own and take ownership of it. Otherwise, what's the point? I don't want to sit here and hold your hand forever. And I'd rather you come to me because you're craving more, not because you just need to stay steady and get some shit done and check the box off. So, yeah, I guess the recommendation is do the first the first principles and work on proximal core stuff because that's really where the carryover is going to be. And it allows the variety and I can make it more sports specific-y or make it appeal to the person that way. Because again, everybody's an individual and everybody has their own things that excite them. So.
For sure. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, one of the things that I heard you obviously work with a lot of clients as well. And with your own personal practice being so intuitively informed where the variation kind of goes day to day, you have this, you literally have dreams about what you have to do the next day, right? Like it's sort of like this mystically guided intuition. How do you use that from a client perspective? Because if you don't have this highly structured approach for your own training from a day to day, are you looking for certain things and certain biomarkers in your clients and how hard you can push them? Do you have certain ways that you check in with them or do you pre-plan all their sessions? Like what's your approach for modulating intensity or variation with clients when your own practice is so intuitive?
Sure. Dude, I mean, I can write out the full 4-month programming for somebody. You mentioned my 4-to-1 ratio earlier. I kind of bring that up because I know people still like that linear. And if they're not confident in their coaching or the understanding of how to like talk about that intuitive stuff with somebody, that's something that's intuitive, even in that moment, that session to session with somebody. You can absolutely still write out programming and attempt to follow it. And I sort of more give this leeway in the programming. There's sort of like rep range leeway, intensity leeway, some level if we need to have the structure with an athlete. And then there can be the complete like, how do you feel today? This is just gone. Like we're not doing this. This doesn't matter. We're going to train something else. That's if I'm hands-on with somebody. But if I have to write a program, there's this 4-to-1 ratio. So this is not like it has to be 4-to-1, but it's just a great place to start for somebody that's more like needs that structure. And it's this idea is there's 4 sides to 1 center. So if I do a coil, let's just pick a pattern. We're going to say, if we're going off movement patterns, that's a very traditional way to program. So we're going to pick a squat. That's a great place to start. We'll say there's going to be a coiled split squat, because a split squat really lends itself to stay coiled. Okay. We'll do a coiled split squat for 8 reps. Then we're going to obviously want to do it on the other side. So I have right and left. I've got 2 sides taken care of proximally. Okay. Then I'm going to do back squats or Zercher squats or something that's traditionally sagittal. Yeah. Now I have 1 center. I'm using both sides together to accomplish the task. Then I'm going to expose the person to what we would call rotational movement, which is the idea of like moving through side to side, ideally. So we're going to expose them to a walking lunge, because that's a great place where the natural gait cycle sort of comes into play, and there's weight shifting, which means there can be proximal core shifting very comfortably. So even if the person doesn't understand that this is day one, I could take them through that process and they're getting my rotational range in their level. Okay. And then as we develop the postures and positions, they could like find that balance. So I got 1 coil side split squat, another coil side split squat, 2 sides. I have 1 center. And then when I perform RMT, I'm getting a right, a left, which gets me 2 more sides. We don't have to like do the logistics of how many reps I did and all that shit. Yeah, yeah. It's not meant to be that complicated. Don't overcomplicate it. But the idea of that is I got more proximal rotation than if I came in and I did squats and then I did bench and then I did curl and I kept them all bilateral in my mind, right. In my words, mm-hmm. Right? Okay. So I'm exposing the athlete. I'm exposing them to positions. I'm exposing them to position again when they squat like they're in the center, and then I'm exposing them to transitions. And we, Alex, who was my co-head coach here for a long time, who's Landmine University now, our big thing together was the positions before transitions. So this idea of like owning the posture, the coil or whatever it is bilaterally, the torsion line there, whatever it is, make sure the person actually has that. And it doesn't have to be this like long thing that they have to like spend months developing it. It can be whatever it is for them now, but at least expose them to a stimulus there, which is where we use elastics to kind of get that posturing, and then expose them to the transitions. This is where I was saying like a CrossFitter, if they just did like a WOD where there was kipping pull-ups and there was thrusters and there was row machine, and then they're going to, let's throw something in there. They're going to do like a snatch or something, right? Whatever. then all of a sudden they have to do walking lunges to the end, the finish line. They've only been exposed for this brief moment at the end of all of that, after all that positioning stuff, to something that gave them the opportunity to find side bending. And they're going to probably use it to whatever level their body will, because they're fatigued and they're going to look for efficiency, and that the body's going to crave it, but they didn't expose themselves prior to what that range could be and potentially what efficiency could be for them to maybe be the one finishing, because they knew something different right at the end of all that crap. So, which all that crap was good too. You know what I mean? Like, I love all that bilateral stuff. It's just all we're trying to do is present the idea that there's more range that people are tapping or not tapping. We should tap into it and then explore that in the things you already love type thing. So programming with the 4-to-1 thing, it could literally be like block to block. Like if I were, I just like traditional movement stuff. If we were doing like a total body workout, I would just do a block of squat, a block of hinge, a block of push, a block of pull. And like, I could just, if I did 1 coiled exercise, 1 bilateral, and then 1 RMT, it automatically keeps that ratio going. And the person leaves the gym with a smile and they leave walking better because they were shifting their weight better. All right. So simple in that sense. And then globally, I could then, if I'm somebody that like works with athletic teams and I have to do like big blocks, like if you like another, that principle can sort of be thrown into other programming models, because I'm not going to tell you I'm the greatest programmer, or there's a lot of things out there that work if you like a different style. So like if you're following, I can't even think of the name right now, like whatever, if you're following like a three block thing, it's like 6 weeks or 4 weeks or something. Mm-hmm. You could have an emphasis on coiling for 1 month. You could have an emphasis on rotational movement, and you could have an emphasis on bilateral movement type thing. And ultimately it would be, in my mind, coil bilateral RMT, so rotational movement. And that would lend itself to like, I'm now stepping into athletic season after that RMT one, because that RMT emphasis would have them closer to like full-fledged athletic movement, weight shifting, things like that. And I would potentially still keep the ratio throughout each session, but the intensity might veer towards whatever the goal is, right? We're going to work on ice. We're going to work on ISOs for a month, but I'm still going to have them do like traditional lifts, but they're not like intensity driven. They're just working patterning. And the focal stuff will be on coiling for a month. So I'll still keep the ratio, but the focal point would be the coiling. And then the next month, we'll put a lot of weight on people and move them through bilateral stuff and do like what a lot of traditional people do right now and get them moving fast and heavy. And then we'll say, fuck that shit. We're done for that month. Now we're going back to rotational movement. Now I'm going to get you, I might even put whatever the sport is, like start putting implements of what the sport is in the room too, just so they're like dealing with that environment they're about to be into and their body's moving in a way that is closer to where they're at. And we can still have the linear progression of training that we're looking for in a training environment. So that's I guess that's as simply as I can put it without like putting it on paper.
Yeah.
And, what I like about it is that there's so much good information out there. Like all of us are all trying to help each other and we all have good information and we're all very adaptable. So the information typically will help us in some way. So this is sort of still to be like even the first principle programming type thing. Like it's sort of it can like live in any program you like. Like you can build off of that. And it just has as long as that ratio is for me, I'd say 4-to-1 because it's like, it's just going to like catch up maybe from all the bilateral stuff you could have been doing with somebody. But it doesn't matter if it's more and it doesn't matter if it's a little less, you know what I mean? So honestly, some of my programs, most of my workouts, if you watch them, will sort of follow it. But if I'm not showcasing that, it's probably because I was doing like 4 hours of filming of like pulsar shit in the building at work. So I got so much RMT that like all I want to do when I go home is move bilateral. You know what I mean? And that's that intuition to know I got enough of this. I need to feel this other stimulation to make sure I'm keeping my balance. And prior to knowing this language, it's kind of what I did intuitively. Like when I go back through the years and think of my programming, I sort of found that sweet spot constantly because I never stuck into somebody's program. I sort of just said, I'll just keep listening to myself. I always sort of found the balance. So this is just the more like, if you need it cut and dry, that way of thinking about it. Yeah.
So hypothetical WEC method periodization, you're still maintaining consistently that ratio of rotational movement and coiling to bilateral movement. Mm-hmm. But the periodization blocks would be like, all right, we're going to focus on intensity of RMT for like, you know, 8 weeks. And then we're going to focus eight weeks intensity of bilateral heavy loading. And then we're going to focus eight weeks on like whatever the blocks happen to be. But like, you know,
however your thought process is. Yep.
It's like, I'm thinking, 100%. Okay, well that sounds like traditional periodization, except you're doing blocks of different focuses of these elements of movement, but you're maintaining these other elements of movements while you're doing it. Maybe and just at lesser.
Even traditional powerlifting, like a lot of the accessory work, the power, like those people tend to expose themselves to like coiled things that could be coiled. You know what I mean? Like movements, like single arm rows, like stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so they're getting it in their range, but they're just not aware they could tap more range. So that's all. I'm just, because they're not thinking athletic carryover in there. They're thinking powerlifting carryover. So they're not thinking of that, but like if they were thinking about it, it wouldn't harm them in their accessory work for their powerlifting, and it would make them feel better and they would probably walk a little better and feel a little more comfortable and they would have longer powerlifting careers is the idea, right? So that's what I would hope for people. And most of the people I've talked to that are successful in those worlds that I've had opportunity that would sort of talk about their programming or when they've hit like some crazy feat and what they did around that time in their careers. Like if you're just listening to what they say and you kind of have like this thought process behind it now, you're like, oh shit, like they were carrying things a lot, they were dragging things, they were using sleds, they were doing hand-to-hand kettlebell swings, not kettlebell swings, like they were doing these things that allowed them to kind of find that RMT or that gait cycle type feeling in the body, even if it wasn't its fullest expression. Like they were manipulating the proximal core in a way, in their own way, to kind of like those are the days that made me feel good so I could power lift again, is what they kind of say, is like kind of what, how I listen to it, like what I'm hearing from the story. So that's really kind of cool to hear that. Not the like, I did this recovery work at that time. It's like, what is the, your, what was your accessory work and your off day type training? What was that? And that's what made him feel the best. And it always has this like cyclical type approach to it, but the range wasn't there. So we're just saying range. That's what I say. Coiling is really our foundation, because we're saying that range is so important. You don't have to have, you don't have to look like me when you do it, but tap your range in it. And that's awesome. So,
I mean, that's fantastic stuff. We're going to have an unpacking episode of just this episode, because so many things came to mind. We talked about the lines of intent. And right now I'm working on, almost like you said, going from straight line and then curving it a little bit and trying to play with those lines of intent to be more free, I guess you can say, right?
Yeah, so that you keep it rigid. So on that, you should do this. You'll play with this. So with like, if you're doing it with the rope is the best tool to play with it, because it demands accuracy in it, because you'll get clipped if not. So like, and it's really easy to mess up and to pick back up. There's no, like, it won't offend you. Keep your eyes on a fixed point. This is the number one rule when you're doing this, is like, have that, like, I'm looking at the basketball hoop, right? And then the rope is hitting the basketball hoop. And then now I'm going to keep looking at the basketball hoop, and I'm going to keep the line always cutting this way, right? Kind of like thinking of somebody like a sling, like they would start having it sort of be like over their shoulder, like off in a different way. Like if they're taunting you type thing, like it's going around. So what that does is it forces you, depending on your stance, to get more coiled on the side that the rope is on, that the line is going that way. And the other side stays longer the whole time because it's stuck on this side of your body. So it teaches you to stay coiled. You don't even get the opportunity to cycle. So you're learning to do something that is traditionally like cyclical like that, but you're learning to like stay locked, which is why we like present the idea of doing something called same side stride, like running, manipulating that understanding, because fuck, it's really handy when you're running downhill, and man, it's really handy when you're running around a corner, and it's really handy when you're cutting, like it's really handy to know. So to manipulate it in a training environment is just kick ass, and to do it with whatever you like to do it with, great. So then you can be exposed to it however you want to be.
Man, that is absolute gold. We're gonna have
sorry.
Right there. Yeah. Like I can see myself doing it tonight and just having a breakthrough, you know, because these are higher level cues that I've thought about this, but it's just not in that way. And that I know that's gonna help out right away. So
So if you see me with the rope and I say I'm breaking the law or I'm breaking cardinal law, there's a couple rope moves I do that you have to, like, I start looking at everything as like a globe around me now, like even under me. And when you're riding that line, there's certain paths you have to take the line and change it without losing the feedback from the tool. So I got like a little like weird about it for a little bit, where like, I didn't like when people were just turning, because if I'm on a compass and like I'm got it going north and I just turn, it's still north if my eyes are going there. I didn't actually change anything. You know what I mean? I didn't actually change anything about what was happening. But if I can keep the visual intent, like all of the forces like meant to go towards that thing, and I'm able to manipulate and not lose the feedback from the tool, and I'm still honoring how the tool is meant to be used, you can start finding these little like paths that are presented that are viable, and like I'm 9,000,000% sure they're actually something people do with weapons training. I need to actually get into weapons training, but most of those people that do that tend to reach out to me like, do you have any background? Because it starts presenting itself like something that would be viable, of like, I've got a guy here and I got to fend him off, and then I have to fend this person off over here with a swinging tool, which again can't change directions or force without like a stopping point, right? Like if I can manipulate it in a sound way without losing my main target, then like, get away from me. I got to kill this guy. Get away from me. I gotta kill this guy. Type thing. So it's cool. Like if you like, that's what I said, I'm kind of a tool junkie, is like figure out how the tool's sort of meant to be used and how you want to use it and the feedback it gives you. And then like try to respect that and then move the way your tool is supposed to be moved and used, and or how you're trying to manipulate it. And the two, that blend of that two, creates a very unique experience and a unique feeling. And it's something like its own little personal thing to master that you can take to other tools and things. Almost like fighting this guy versus fighting this guy. You know what I mean? Like it's a different human being. They're a different tool in that instance, how you're going to react to them and how you have to use your body. So, and because most of us are very nonviolent, or we're not exposed to martial arts, or it may just not pique our interest, we lack that opportunity to experience that. So this is something that I think is just very natural and human to want to experience things like that, but we just don't get exposed to it the same way anymore. That's why I said fitness is kind of funny to me. It's like, because we don't really need to adapt to anything, really. Unfortunately, most of us, no survival reason.
Yeah, lives of extraordinarily unnatural comfort. It's really interesting, the differentiation between that martial versus locomotive input that you pointed out there. Because even when Will was teaching me some of the basics of the rope, the underhand pattern, to me, it's that's the pattern that I experience when I'm running, that locomotive underhand rotation in the shoulders, versus when I started doing some of the matador and the overhand stuff, Will's like, hey, that's your overhand. That's like, you know, when you're striking. So it's like you get this underhand is like the locomotive, the overhand is the martial, and you experience maybe not universally. That was just something that I kind of noticed.
That we used to present it that way. And then like when you actually watch stuff, this is where I said it actually becomes more complex. So I think what the rope does is underhand actually emphasizes external torsion primarily. It tends to ride that line nice and fluidly. And then overhand tends to ride internal torsion. Okay, it doesn't have to, but they tend to. That's where they sort of like go for somebody. And what that ends up doing is it exposes you to those, and it makes you feel a piece of what those actions you were talking about, a piece of the throw or the punch and a piece of running. But what you'll notice is both are actually happening at the same time in running. Usually you're feeling like the down, the overhand and the underhand happen simultaneously. You might just put emphasis on one or the other. But some people say drop the hammer in running because they're talking about the overhand side of it, where we talk about pulsing. We're thinking about elbow high and pulsing down because we're trying to emphasize the underhand, which I think people don't think about. That's the thing we're thinking about differently. But both sides are important, and working one side typically gets you carry over to the other side. But you need to know what the other side is so you can work that side to get carry over to the other side. So a lot of like I've tried to help Dave. Really, he'll get very one track on something, which is great. That's fine. That gets you really deep into ideas and concepts. But we always like, I'll sit down and we'll talk together and we'll say, all right, so what's the other side? Because I don't care if you think that's the greatest thing in the world, there's another side to it. And that's the other greatest thing in the world. And we need to have the blend of them. So we say both sides utilized. And not that you need to keep harmony between them, but you don't want to overexpose one, I would say. Like, I think you could get lost in it. And I think that's where you start getting repetitive stress or injury or whatever you want to call it, or just poor performance. I don't even think it always results in like being hurt. I think a lot of people are like fearful of pain and hurt and stuff, but it's, I don't think that's always the case. Start right.
You good?
Yeah. I think he's frozen.
Yeah, sorry about that. My wife was calling.
All good. We're back. Well, on that note, I think that'd be a pretty good place to wrap up. This was episode 60 of The Art of Move. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to talk about these nuanced concepts with us. This is 100% where we geek out. You're really giving me permission to kind of re-inspire me to start lifting again and start getting back into some of the stuff that frankly I've really missed through just emphasizing locomotive mechanics and focusing on biomechanics at the expense of strength training in some cases, right? So this has really inspired me to kind of approach it from a different angle, to think about it a little bit more critically and probably integrate a little bit more. If you want to learn more about you and your work, I know we have you at @Christopher.Chamberlain_ on Instagram. Is there anywhere else that people can learn about working with you?
Of course. I mean, check out at WEC Method, of course. And Honestly, the best way to get with me is to take one of my courses. So the RMT Rotational Movement Training Specialist course, we do those live. You can take it online at your own convenience. So if you're listening from someplace else, and we got a couple of live courses that we're going to be doing outside of San Diego, but typically we do those in San Diego. We actually have one coming up in July, on July 23rd at Onnit in Austin. So
oh, amazing.
We'll be going on the road there. Yeah, so that's cool. A good spot. Yeah, so we'll be there, and we might have some international ones to check out as well. So we're in the works on those.
Cool. And you could probably find the listings for those courses on WECMethod.com,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, WECMethod.com, live training, or take the online version if you don't
have. I've taken the course, and it's fantastic, so I can vouch for that. And yeah, I'll probably actually take it again one more time. So
nice.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, again, Chris, live. Thanks. Yeah. We'll fly out to San Diego and have to do it with you. That's great. Well, Chris, thanks again for coming out and talking to us on The Art of Move. This was episode 60. If you guys are listening on Spotify or iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us out with the visibility. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe and comment, or if you didn't like it, then just carry on with your life. That's totally fine too. We always post our upcoming episodes on nofilter.net, where we can stream live, interactive. You can join the stream yourself to ask our guests questions. You can type your comments in the live chat, which we didn't get a chance to do today, unfortunately, but we will next time. And thanks for listening to The Art of Move, guys. We'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks again, Chris. This was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, guys.